John Lowe grew up on a farm in western Kenya, and a few years ago he revisited the country to record the music of the villages, from Lake Victoria to the Great Rift Valley.
About a successful journey with a rich patron. In the course of it, the singer, Ogwang, is given a car and also earns enough money to get married. The instrument is the Nyatiti, the eight-stringed lyre of the Luo people who live around Lake Victoria in western Kenya. In one part of the song, a devout Christian family runs away from the Nyatiti player in terror, believing him to be Satan. The church in Kenya, particularly during the colonial period, tended to be very hostile towards traditional music. Fortunately, the Nyatiti proved unassailable and is still the most important Luo instrument, popular with both young and old. Lyres with bowl resonators are common round Lake Victoria and throughout northern Kenya and the Horn of Africa generally. One theory is that they spread down through Africa from the Mediterranean or the Middle East. Whether this is the case, or whether in fact they evolved locally, they come in a bewildering variety of shapes and sizes, matched by an equal range of tunings and playing techniques. In 1979, I came back to Kenya, where I'd spent my childhood, to investigate Kenya guitar styles and the folk roots from which they had sprung. My first stop was the home of my friend Joseph Adhiambo Suku in Siaya district, close to where I recorded Ogwang. I soon discovered that musical skills amongst the Luo are not limited to a professional like Ogwang. Joseph's elderly mother called together a group of friends and relatives to entertain me. They sang and danced, accompanying themselves on rattles made of beer bottle tops strung onto wire loops. This next song is about a family member who achieved fame, or notoriety, by distilling a type of local gin.
Ningue,
The next day, perched on the back of a bicycle, I was conveyed to a neighbouring village to hear a group of Ahangala drummers. They were subsistence farmers. In their ragged clothes, they seemed very poor. Like many musicians, they rely on their playing to earn a part-time income. In the following number, the leader, Petalis Goa, played a long, thin drum with a head made of python skin. Another drummer played five drums of assorted sizes, while the third man provided a rhythm on the shaker, a perforated tin filled with seeds. The song was another eulogy to the perfect benefactor who showers a musician with extravagant gifts. The next stage of my journey took me about 60 miles south to Kisii, set in green rolling hills and home to the Abugusii people. My father had been district commissioner here in the 50s, and he gave me a letter of introduction to Chief Zachariah Angwenyi, who lives not far from the town. The chief introduced me to four players of the giant Obokano lyre. This is the largest of the Kenya lyres. It's about 3 feet long, and with a resonating bowl 1.5 feet in diameter, quite a handful. The strange buzzing sound produced by the Obokano comes from the vibration of the 8 strings against a very wide bridge held in place by great lumps of beeswax. The song you'll hear is in praise of Chief Zachariah and of my father's skill in settling land disputes, with a number of references to myself. I'm portrayed rather flatteringly as Slender John, who has come to visit us from England. Johnny from Ingerandi. A praise song featuring the giant Obokano lyre, which plays a central part in the annual circumcision ceremonies of the Abugusii people. After Kisii, I travelled a short way north of Lake Victoria to the town of Maseno. The Luhya people of this area are as famous for their fine musicians as their Luo neighbours. One morning, with David Otindo, a friend from Nairobi, I visited a bar nearby to hear Mbwaya Amulioto play his Litungu lyre. Playing for singers and dancers in noisy bars is bread and butter for a lot of musicians, and this adds to their reputation for riotous living. I found I was expected to provide a supply of the local gin for the musicians, and this led to a very lively session. The following number advises suitors to dress smartly when first visiting their prospective in-laws, since the first impression is always a lasting one. If you listen carefully, you can hear coins at one point being thrown into the bowl of the lyre by an admirer.
Ochenda uto.
One of my interests on this trip was to look for the links between traditional lyre music and the sort of thing that people play on the guitar. Superficially, there isn't perhaps a great deal of similarity. But many of the guitarists I met insisted that they draw on their tribal roots as strongly as lyre players. They also play in similar venues, like bars or dance halls. Many of them told me that they were looked down on because of their supposedly racy lifestyle. Especially during the 50s and the 60s, they faced considerable hostility from families, the church, and the authorities in general. In contrast to this image, the next song extols the virtues of education for girls. It's in Kiswahili, and the guitarist is William Osale, who comes from Kakamega, just north of where I recorded the Litungu lyre. The number is in the Bansi Sakuti style, based on Luhia drumming rhythms. A guitar song dating from the early 60s, when guitarists often took up nationalistic themes, in this case universal education. From Kakamega, my journey took me almost 100 miles to the north into the remote Kerio Valley, a tributary of the Great Rift Valley. The fertile farms of the south had given way to the arid thorn scrub of northern Kenya. The pastoral Pokot people live here. They're no strangers to the harsh realities of drought, cattle raiding, and armed conflict. My first stop was at Chesegon, a village nestling at the foot of a great escarpment. I'd heard about a musician called Loikwangorok Kwalia who lived near there, and late one afternoon, in the company of some teachers, I climbed up to his home, which was perched on an incredibly steep hill. It had been built here as a protection against raiders. Loikwangorok played a very old Pokot lyre, known as Pekan, and in keeping with the harsh surroundings, one of his songs was about war. A warrior of the neighbouring Marakwet tribe has been captured by Pokot men, and on the point of being killed, he starts to weep. Don't cry, he is sternly reprimanded by his executioners. A warrior should behave like a man. The Pekan lyre is not the only instrument played by the Pequot people. A day or so later in Chesegon, I met Jackson René, a young Pequot man who had come a considerable distance to visit relatives and to borrow money. His father had died some time earlier, and his mother and family were in financial difficulties. He was a very skillful player of the kureru, a simple flute made from the hollow branches of the giant lobelia that grows high up in the Cherangani hills nearby. Young livestock herders play this flute to while away the hours. The flute has only two finger holes, but a good player can produce a surprisingly wide range of notes by varying the pressure of his breath. Jackson told me that he had heard Samburu herders whistling to their cattle in Laikipia district to the east, and that this had inspired him to make up the next tune on his kureru. The next stage of the trip was a 10-mile trek across the hot floor of the Kerio Valley to a place called Kaloa. Normally, I would have enjoyed this, but I was recovering from a bout of amoebic dysentery. And when I heard that the previous year a Kenyan attempting this journey had been robbed and killed, this added to my discomfort. As it turned out, there were no problems on the way, and the walk was enlivened by nothing more dangerous than a refreshing dip in the Kerio River, somehow avoiding the crocodiles. My goal was the house of a remarkable musician and craftsman called Tongong Merikoko. He was the best-known player of the Pekan, the Pequot lyre, and had recently been in Nairobi, where he'd played for President Arap Moi. Compared to many of his countrymen, he was well-travelled, and had managed to introduce some national themes into some of his songs. In the next song, Tongong sings about herders who have been driven from their normal pastures by cattle raiders. He then claims, perhaps a little optimistically, that the government has restored peace to the area and urges the people to return home to feed their ailing livestock.
Mone jonga yege danyile nguria ge yege danyile nguria we yege ge unyangai da Mone jonga yege la zamro no e la zamro no o ma bore Mone nga yege danyile nguria ge yege timbolo baba we ge uja baga Mone jonga yege danyile nguria ga yeche muni jowe yege ge unyangai da mone jang yeg la zamra no la zamra no o ma bore mone jang la zamra ro jama ngonya la zamra ra jama ngonya yeg ge u jama gwa mone jang yeg da ni le ngur ya ga ye ji ye yeg ge u jama gwa mone jang yeg la zamra no la zamra no o ma bore mone jang yeg da ni le ngur ya ga ye je mone jang yeg ge u jama gwa
Tongong was a skilled woodworker. He'd introduced a number of design improvements into the making of the pecan lyre, for example, a fuller resonating bowl. He made a pecan for me, and even taught me one or two tunes. However, despite the improved design and all Tongong's efforts to gain wider coverage for Pekot music, I sensed he was not making a great deal of headway. Gradually I got the impression that in Kenya traditional music is not really valued outside a narrow tribal framework, although within this framework it still has an enduring place. Real traditional music, as opposed to the variety dished up for tourists, gets hardly any national media time, nor is it much used to express or create a sense of national identity. This may be because it's difficult to mould a national identity from so many diverse tribal groups. Partly, though, it reflects the extent to which moneyed classes in the towns have turned their backs on traditional culture. There are signs, though, that popular musicians in the towns are going back to their roots. Sometimes they feature traditional instruments in their music, but there's still a long way to go. The last song, also by Tongong, is about a young woman called Cheptukwe, whose father is a waster and has failed to provide for her. Only through good luck and with the help of some sympathetic cousins is she able to buy the leather skirts that make her marriageable. But when she eventually does marry, her father sets off a family row by demanding his share of the bride price. In some respects, Cheptukwe's plight mirrors that of Kenya's traditional musicians. Often poor, and with minimal support from the state, they achieve national recognition only through rare strokes of good fortune.
From Lake Victoria to the Great Rift Valley, That programme of traditional music from northwestern Kenya was presented by John Lowe. Next week we move to Taiwan and the music of its Aboriginal peoples. Songs to Help the Crops Grow is presented by David Hughes. The series producer is John Thornley.